Live from the International Space Station,
it's Snacks for the Brain.
Hello, y'all. This is Scott Merrick from the Vanderbilt Center for Science Outreach.
Bringing you
episode number 34 of Snacks for the Brain. Today I met with my old friend Arnie Heiser using Skype voice over IP technology to record the phone conversation.
And hot recorder.
The resulting audio file has some interesting little sort of quality to it that I hope you will appreciate. Let's get right down to it.
Anyway, let's try this interview thing.
Yeah, we're recording, and you know, I have to tweak that. But let's see, and I can do some other introduction. I can also cut out any uhs or, you know, weird sounds or something. But in my experience in having conversations with you, you don't use a lot of uhs. I usually have to work on myself.
I try not. You know, 67 years of practice sometimes helps.
Well, let's see. I guess the first thing I want to ask you is, why do you go to work every day? You're retired. You're supposed to be laying around and fishing.
See, that's the first. I come to work because it's like a hobby, in the sense that when retired people retire, you always hear about their hobbies, what they do in their spare time. One of the things I didn't want to do in my spare time is sit around at home and vegetate. So by coming up here to the observatory, I can do a number of things in an environment that I feel comfortable in. And I don't mean just the outside environment with the trees and the wildlife, although that helps, but being around a partial library, having access to the Vanderbilt Library,
mm-hmm.
I can continue keeping up with what's going on in the astronomical community. That is, I can read abstracts every day. I can read journals that the Vanderbilt Library has access to every day. What I can do also is to work on research projects that I never completed while I was unretired, or while I was on the faculty in a formal sense.
Mm-hmm.
This research is not terribly what one would call frontier astronomy, in that I'm not working on galaxies or cosmology or looking for new planets or making new theories. Mostly I'm working on material involving variable stars that I started a long time ago. It took many years of data because these variable stars have periods, that is how long they take to pulsate, that change with time.
Mm-hmm.
And one needs a fairly long baseline to get some clue as to how these things change. In particular, there are things called Cepheid variables, which are very large, what we call supergiant pulsating variables, that have periods ranging, the ones I've been working on anyway, have periods somewhere between 20 and 50 days. And if you look at their period changes over 20 years, you notice that their periods do change. For example, instead of being 20.00 days, they may become 20.012 days.
Right. So what does that tell you?
Well, it tells you that the stars are evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good example of evolution that we could actually see compared to, let's say, the sun, where we don't see any evolution if you stayed around for 200 years.
Right.
There's no way to see the sun's evolution very readily.
But
these kind of special stars, since their lifetimes are incredibly short, you know, millions of years or less, they do their so-called pulsating stage of their evolution in timescales that are now amenable to observations. Of course, one has to use observations made by other people in the past.
Right.
So, for example, I have stars that people have been observing since the 1910s and 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the observations are not very good because they were done with photographs or with eyes. That is, just using your eyeball technique. So that it's you have to be very careful how you use the old data,
right,
compared to the data that I've been able to get over the years, which is so much better.
Yeah, that leads me to ask, is the technology developing these days in a way that improves the kind of research you're able to do?
Yes, you can now make measurements of star brightness which are needed to show variability, to less than 1%. Photographic stuff and visual stuff is maybe 30-40% accurate.
Yeah.
And old technology, that is technology of the 60s and 70s, you know, mm-hmm. it's 30, 40 years
old. I hate that you're calling that old, but I understand.
I've been observing since the 1960s, so I've been observing for 40 years. and that stuff, those observations in the 60s and 70s are probably good to 4 or 5%, maybe even 3%.
Oh, well.
Nowadays, for example, you could talk to Greg Henry over at TSU. He's getting observations that are almost less than 0.1%.
Amazing. Well, so, that's in line with all of the other sort of exponential change that we see in all kinds of other technology areas.
That's true. And this is just one aspect of this sort of thing. Hmm. In fact, the TSU people and Greg Henry had collected data for me already this past winter on a star, a different kind of star, eclipsing binary star,
mm-hmm.
where the period has also been changing, although we've only been observing that star for 30 or 40 years.
Oh, well.
The period is certainly changing in an eclipsing binary, which has to do more with the nature of the two stars in the binary as opposed to any kind of internal effects
mm-hmm.
that the stars make. So, yes, I'm still sort of collecting data. Although I don't do it myself, you know, the TSU telescopes in Arizona work automatically.
Right.
And what Greg Henry does for us, or for me anyway, is that at the end of a season, in this case the winter, they'll send me a file of reduced data.
Right.
And I can use that data to compare with the stuff I've gotten before on this particular star. So
what you're saying is you haven't really retired. You're just not getting paid for it.
Not at all. Unless you count Social Security.
Well, I guess you have to count that.
As getting paid. No, you're right. And, you know, and the other things I do up here is to help out a little bit.
Yeah, I know that you do frequently. You contribute presentations to the Interactive Video Conferencing Program.
Yes, I do some of that, and I've taken care of groups here. And I even had to help with a scout night once.
Yeah, that place.
Because Rocky is so darn busy.
Yeah, you know, in my show notes at snacksforthebrain.blogspot.com, I've already started working on the file for this show, and I mentioned the arboreal setting up there. But that place just cranks and jams sometimes. Like last week, you had an event up there, didn't you?
I can't remember.
I think.
I mean, this weekend they had a music event. They had this Beth Chapman something or other.
Oh, well.
Yeah, that was 2.5 days, Friday night, Saturday, and yesterday.
That was a songwriter session, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
That's an amazing side enterprise that you guys have gotten up to in there, is bringing world-class, well-known songwriters and entertainers.
Right. Right. In fact, there's a Music on the Mountain.
That's because it's Nashville, y'all.
Well, you know, over the years, we've also had the Blair School come up and do one or two things.
Mm-hmm.
I can recall the Blair School coming up with their tuba business.
Oh, I remember that one.
A tuba concert for 45 minutes, which is kind of fun.
I wonder what the neighbors thought of that.
I don't know, but you know, you can hear this stuff on certain days down in the valley. Especially in the fall when the trees start losing their leaves. We have a lot of protection, you know, mm-hmm. in the summertime. The leaves act as kind of sound barriers as well as light barriers
mm-hmm.
To everything.
Well, let me ask you, when you do the video conferences, I know I was up there for a lot of those, and in my experience, mileage varied with the classrooms we reached. Is the interaction getting any easier or better as everybody gets a little more practice with it?
The interaction is okay. Let me tell you about two things that happened this spring that I thought were worth telling you.
Mm-hmm.
I volunteered to do something with second graders.
Yeah, I think we volunteered you, didn't we?
Yes, whatever it was. And one of the things about those interactions, besides the kids, is that they were prepared technologically to do things. They had these little microphones sitting on tables in front of the kids.
Very nice.
You know, like one microphone for every three or four kids, so that they didn't have to run around with a microphone. They didn't have to, you know, turn up everything so they could hear the questions. Kids would sit in front of one of these microphones, press the button or whatever it is on them, and you could hear their questions.
And that was second graders.
Yeah, and well, that was this particular classroom that had all these things. And then later on, you know, I talked to a sixth grade class, not an eighth grade class or a science class, high school science class, one of the two, about some other topic. And they didn't have that. In fact, they mentioned, I think, in their review or their, what's the word?
Evaluation.
In the evaluation, that their TV screen was too small. People who have big screens and have microphones for the right places make it easier for to interact with the kids. In particular in astronomy, because, you know, you're showing them a lot of pictures.
Right.
And it's not like you're some like social scientist who's talking about some social problem where you really don't need pictures so much. But in astronomical things, you know, we have all these great pictures and all these great fly-like things, and, you know, observatory pictures. And for the kids to see them, they really need one of these 50-inch plasma screens or something.
Right, or an LCD projector, which works quite well in a good setting.
But if they just have, you know, a 40-inch TV, I mean, a 35-inch television set for the whole class, you know, they miss out. I think they miss out. Well, it's okay for me because I'm sitting in front of our TV set and I can see everything kind of clearly.
And you have it all to yourself.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. That's good advice for anybody who wants to participate in one of these, is to really look at your setting and make sure that you have what's going to enhance the experience for the kids so that they get the full benefit.
Yeah, I think that the concept of having enough microphones around to where you don't lose any great amount of time by running a microphone around or having the kids come to the front of the class and speak to through a microphone. Anyway, I have fun with those. And fortunately, you guys don't ask me to do a large number of them.
Well, we're going to ask you again next year because
I know.
You do a wonderful job with them.
Thanks.
And it's just a joy for me to see you interacting with the kids. They take well to you, and you have a lot to teach them. And I want to thank, on behalf of the Center for Science Outreach, I want to thank you.
Scott, good talking with you.
Good talking with you, Arnie.
Take care, and I hope this thing works out. I mean, I hope you get your laptop device working to your satisfaction.
Wonderful, and I will send you an email when it's up and available. You could share with your family.
Okay.
And colleagues. Thanks,
good
Arnie.
Talking to you again. Yeah. Bye
bye. Bye bye.
As my daddy used to say, that's all
that's
she wrote.
All, that's
she
all wrote. She wrote.
That's all she
that's
wrote.
All she wrote.
Music for today's podcast has been provided by the Pod Save Music Network at music.podshow.com. Please check them out at your leisure.
Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for Snacks for the Brain.